Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, how you doing this fine Monday?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm doing well. It's moving day. We're moving my oldest back to Athens this afternoon. I just got a text a little while ago that Mom and Katie made it to Athens with the U-Haul safely, and now they're just waiting on me to get over there and take orders.
Then lift heavy objects, right?
Well, you know, typically my job is to go out and get pizza because I got smart this year, and I hired a couple of young, strapping football players from Pope High School.
So, good plan.
So that's what's going on with me after the show. But during the show, we are going to have some folks with Ty. We have Kabir Bardet, Bill Crossley, and Angel Marquez. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
So I want to start with you, Kabir. Give us get us caught up on what Ty is up to these days and talk to us a little bit about this TyX thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So Ty is a global nonprofit entrepreneurial organization that works with startups of all different phases. Specifically, TyX, that Bill, Angel, and myself are part of, is more focused on very early startups, really ideation stage. And it really fills a gap in Atlanta where if you just have an idea, you're not sure if it's a good idea or a bad idea, you just want to talk to the right people, understand what support network is in Atlanta to help you develop those ideas. Now, that's really where TyX's sweet spot is. And it's a four-week program where you go through ideation, customer discovery, and mentorship.
Now, is it a person or a business? Like, at what stage, like, anybody can have an idea. Do you guys just take anybody that has ideas?
Yeah, there is an application process. One of the differentiators of TyX is we don't focus just on technology startups. So as part of the cohorts we were, Bill, Angel, and I were part of, there was everything from consulting practices to nutrition practices to some high-tech companies and all sorts of different ideas.
So bringing in a brigadier general to give these folks some counsel, that sounds like a pretty solid move. But what compelled you, Bill, to get involved?
I wasn't a soldier all my life. After I retired, I was something of a, well, it depends on how you look at it. My wife would view it as a failure at retirement. I refer to myself as a serial entrepreneur with four startups in the U.S. and Europe. And so I have a little bit of wisdom, more scars than wisdom perhaps, to pass along to some of these youngsters who are looking to start up a company for the first time.
Now, when you're working and you're mentoring one of these people that are at the idea stage, can you kind of walk us through what that conversation or initial conversations are like?
Well, they're quite interesting. You hear business ideas coming from every different direction. I think it's important to help the entrepreneur-to-be frame their concept with a view toward what's this business going to look like after you've put it together. And what's the business going to look like after it achieves success? In my mind, the young entrepreneur ought to be looking toward the end game of his multi-million dollar enterprise. And when you do that, and you walk the dog backwards, it leads you to understand that perhaps team is more important than your product or your concept, and look at the market opportunity in the global sense. And just generally envision that company as it's going to be 5 years from now when you want to sell it and cash out. That's the American dream. Build it, run it, sell it. That's the mantra of the American entrepreneur.
If only there was a book that could explain all that.
Yeah. Well yes. My last company was eChapter One. We were one of the early ebook retailers. And we're we pioneered the concept of giving away Chapter 1 in digital form as a way to entice readers to come to our website and buy our books. And one of the sidelights of our business was that we summarized business books. And we did that with the publisher's permission, and we promised our subscribers that we would provide them with only the a summary of only the best current business books. The summary would be 6 to 8 pages long, 3,500 words. And we had a covey of great writers, including Steve Lohr from the New York Times, who was moonlighting with us. And we quickly discovered that most business books can be summarized in a paragraph or a page at the most. And so that was a little bit of a problem. Sometimes we had to stretch to get 3,000 words.
You just had to stretch 3,000 more words?
Well, yes. But we had great writers, and they did that. And as a matter of fact, we were the only outfit that was authorized, had permission to summarize Michael Gladwell's book. And Gladwell is arguably the finest business book writer of the last 20 years. And so when we closed the company, I decided that I was through with the entrepreneurial world. I was going to write a book, but it would be a book for entrepreneurs, but it would show rather than tell entrepreneurs how I thought they ought to proceed, and it would address the building a team and the development of the product or the service, the creation of the market and the marketing strategy, which I think is more important than the product, actually, and generating the startup plan, generating the revenue, and finding the investors. So that's how the book came to be about.
Angel Marquez,
yes.
What's your involvement with this outfit, and how did you get started?
Actually, I got started by going through TIEX.
Oh, so you went through it?
Yes, I did.
So you lived to tell the tale here. So take us through, what was your company, and what was your idea, and how did they help you bring it to life?
So basically what we do is for budget, the name of the company is called YouThinkPC. Okay, for budget-conscious PC gamers, we aggregate data, and that enables us to rank graphics cards according to how much performance it provides per individual dollar. Now, to most people, get a chance to appreciate graphic processors when they go to watch a movie from like DreamWorks or your latest episode of Modern Marvels. But to PC gamers, that's the weapon in their rig, as they so-called their desktop computers, that enables them to fight off the zombie hordes and conquer worlds and all that good stuff.
So they get real geeky about their graphics card?
So that's exactly the problem. That so what they really want to do, just like any other gamer, is just play the game.
Yeah, but they like the toys, the right? The gadgets that make it go.
Of course, of course.
So you help them kind of optimize their gaming system?
Yeah. Basically, what we do is we provide the best card for their performance. Mm-hmm. You tell us a budget. You know, my budget is $200-$300, whatever. And we tell you what card performs best for that amount of money.
Now, how did the TIEX people help you?
I mean, their help has really been invaluable in explaining the idea, because it's interesting how in a closet full of gamers, it's all lingo, it's all textbook. It's like, we're gonna slay them, and you know, and all that stuff. But when you get out to the business world, they're like, slay? What?
Right. I'm a little confused.
About?
Right.
Yeah. So, and then when you take that to an investor, they're like, yeah, kid, go back to
no
your
slaying.
Closet.
We're not gonna fund slaying.
That sounds illegal, immoral, and you know, we're just not comfortable with that.
Right. So, so what happened? You went through the 4-week program?
Yes. We went through the whole 4-week program. They helped us in basically how to talk about our ideas in an way that more people couldn't understand, mm-hmm. That they could understand the value proposition that we're bringing.
Right.
That we could clearly, because that's very important, to clearly identify the problem, which in basic terms is that at the very best, finding out what kind of graphics card you're looking for, it is a time sink. Because right. of all the information you have to aggregate just to get the warms and fuzzies of like, yeah, okay, this is the graphic card that I need. At the very worst, it's your own personal trip to the null void.
Right. So now, how did they take you through? This was a concept, and then they helped you take it all the way through a e-commerce site? Like, what was the end result?
So the end result is that this Wednesday, we're actually releasing our MVP, a low fidelity MVP, uh-huh. where we're going to go through the customer discovery process.
M as in Mary?
M as in Mary.
So that's the minimum viable product?
That is correct.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, the whole lean startup model has been really invaluable to uh-huh. us in the process of how to get this business from an idea that you're just very excited about. Don't know how to make money with it yet. You just think it's cool.
Right.
To a full blown business.
So, Kabir, General, and I'll ask you first, Kabir, do you see some of the same gaps or missing components or mistakes over and over when these folks come through the program, or is it always a wide variety?
Yeah, so it's a different mixture of things. I think we work with startups of all different phases. So we worked in the last session with startups who had dedicated a year of time, had left their full-time job, built not a minimum viable product, but a full product.
And they had clients? Or
they had no customers and hadn't thought about it. Yeah, and they hadn't even thought about selling or even if people would want it.
That's a leap of faith, huh?
Yeah, so which is very counterintuitive to the lean methodology.
Right.
And so we see those types of things come in and have to delicately try to expose them to kind of the methodology that we teach with TIEX. And then there are folks on the other end, and I actually came into the program as a participant my first year with just a laundry list of bad ideas. And
so you had a folder of ideas that you've been accumulating?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think a lot of folks do who are interested in startups and think, you know, you talk with your roommates and friends and everything's a great idea.
Right.
And really what was great is the first class helps you really evaluate an idea in a quantitative way. They put numbers behind it in terms of market segment, total addressable market, and what your potential revenue could be like with that total addressable market. And that's really what helps people understand their mistakes in a very objective way without any feelings.
So what was one of your ideas that as soon as you put that first criteria to it, exploded and went away?
So there were a number of them. The idea I started with was really a remote order taking app focused on fast food,
right?
To kind of cut down my 5-minute wait for my Baconator to a 30-second wait right. for my Baconator. And so apparently I'm one of the very few people with that problem.
So how did you determine that that was the case?
Well, so we walked through a number of different scenarios in terms of what number of fast food restaurants actually have this problem and would operators of the fast food restaurant have a problem. And then on the other side of it is who's paying you, right? So in my model, what I would either need a user to pay you or restaurant operator to pay you.
Right, the franchisor.
I learned that I don't think either one would really want to pay me for that type of idea.
But wouldn't the franchisor want to speed up their drive-through time?
They would, but there are a number of ways that are trying to solve that problem today. None really too effectively, but what we're talking about with a lot of these McDonald's and Wendy's is they're already at this level where it's 2-3 minutes, 1 minute for a lot of them. And really the market is like the Einstein's or the Steak and Shake where it takes maybe a 10 minutes. And there's not that many of those in terms of right. a billion-dollar idea.
And it has to be $1 billion. That's what I've heard, that $1 billion is the number that, like, VCs, you got. That's like table stakes.
It's a good number. Now, there are a type of a lot of ideas that you don't necessarily need a billion-dollar idea, but something that you could sell very quickly. And so that's kind of how the idea evolved into there are a number of startups in Atlanta – like Half Off Depot, who try to buy these couponing sites and things like that. So right. So that's kind of how the idea evolved a little bit into more of an optimization and an off-peak couponing type app. And so that's what I'm working on now. And one of the nice things, actually, to Angel's point, one of the most interesting things for me as part of TIEX was really the immersion in the Atlanta startup community, which is a very tight-knit, manageable community with organizations like a Hypopotamus, a TIE, all sorts of different hackathons, ATDC, and Flashpoint, right. And really just a central class where you could learn about the Atlanta startup community and really become part of that community immediately following it. That was really the valuable part for me.
Now, did you have a team? Like, because that's one of the components of this program, right, is putting a team together?
Yeah, you do. You do register as a team. In my case, I registered as an individual when I joined. A number of the folks were individuals. There were some that had outsourced teams of development, some that did it themselves. So there's no real distinction. We take anybody.
Now, you don't have to be a developer to be part of this. You can have an idea and not have any skills to code or to build a website or anything. You could just be a person with an idea and maybe.
This place is swimming with coders. I think if you don't have a coder and you have an idea, this is the place to go play, right?
Is that true?
Yeah. It's a real, and that's one of the interesting things about TIEX is that we take any idea in any phase, even just paper napkin or an idea in your head. It's a very self-motivated commitment. You know, there's no sign-in sheet and the homework we review, but it's not graded. So you really need to be a self-starter, motivated. We take anybody that wants to be part of the program as opposed to, say, an ATDC or in a Flashpoint in Atlanta where you quit your job, you really focus on it.
You're going all in.
Yeah.
This you can kind of just get your toe in there, right? You don't have to go all in. You can have a full-time job and do this on the side.
Absolutely. This is what helps you make that decision whether you're ready for the next step.
In general, the times that you've seen would-be entrepreneurs come in, some of the mistakes that they make that are consistent?
Well, let's start with the folks that come in with a science project on a cocktail napkin. They're really at square one, and the mistakes are all over the neighborhood. I guess for the benefit of the radio audience, I would say that there's one that stands out very clearly in my mind, and that is the inability or the having lacked the thought process on the part of the entrepreneur to put themselves into the shoes of the investor. By and large, every entrepreneur knows exactly what his or her exit strategy is. They know what kind of a boat they're going to buy after they sell out. They know where they're... They know the name of the boat. They know where they're going to berth it. Investors really don't care about your boat very much. What they care about is their boat. And they want to know what their exit strategy is. And they have a very well thought out plan in terms of their allocation of investment money. They understand very clearly what their investment strategy will be. They know how much time, effort it takes. And they have different motivations, but by and large, their end game is their exit strategy. So when a young entrepreneur starts with his or her science project on a cocktail napkin and they know it's going to take $400,000, $500,000 of investment on the first round, and there might be three or four rounds. And so they need to be thinking through how that they're going to give up equity. It's just going to happen. One can't be greedy. That's probably the first turnoff for an investor. So to put themselves into the shoes of the investor and just sort of think through the entire process as the company is going to develop, that's a new idea for most.
Well, I find it interesting that you feel that the investor is the number one concern of this, the inventor of the idea, the founder of the company, not the customer. Or is their first customer the investor? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I wouldn't say that the investor is in front of the customer. Clearly, you have to know who your customer is. Mm-hmm. I remember your presentation, your first presentation, and we asked, so who's the customer? And we couldn't figure out if it was the person who was coming through the Arby's drive-through line, if that were the, or if it was the Arby's franchise owner. We couldn't figure that out. We weren't sure that you knew what it was, who the customer was. So, yeah, you have to have that basic business concept in your mind as the entrepreneur. But when you launch, you have to have a very realistic plan for the generation of the startup capital. And that usually involves an investor. And when you have an investor involved, you have to put yourself in that investor's shoes and think through the process.
Angel?
Yeah, I think entrepreneurs come in like a vast variety from different backgrounds and things like that. There's people that go to school and study entrepreneurship, and they come with this knowledge of business. So when they make a business move, they're like, I got my big boy pants on. Let's do this. But I think the majority of people, and speak for myself, we're just passionate about an idea, and it's like my little toy, and I'm going to sell it, and I know all my friends are going to buy this, and it's great. So to Bill's point, what this process does is kind of shock you into like, okay, that's nice that you're in La La Land, but this is the real world now. You know, your idea needs maturing. And this customer discovery process, this business model concept, you know, it really makes you dissect your idea to, is it a business? And then if it's not a business, pivot. If it is a business, then figure out. And sometimes, to the point of some people, you get to a point where either you follow your idea and keep your full-time job because it's just a hobby, or you make your idea work and you make it into a business, and that's when you're like, okay, we can make this work. So I think this whole, what Ty does is it allows you to dip your foot into the water with just an idea and mature so that, you know, you can live the American dream, the rock star dream of like, I'm going to be Google, you know?
Right. Well, you can take it as far as the marketplace will take it,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Exactly. And if you so desire to, you know, take your company, cash, sell, you know, et cetera, then that's great. If you want to ride it all the way to the top, then that's great too. The point is that you take your idea, test it in the market to see if it's a business, and then you take it from there. If not, then you just don't waste your time.
Right.
So early in the conversation, someone here actually specifically mentioned the term methodology. Is there structured methodology to this program, or is it more just kind of leaning on the expertise and seasoned folks that have done this before?
No, the methodology is the core to the curriculum of the course. It follows the startup engineering lean lean startup methodology. So the program starts with an evaluation of the market, the financials, and then you go into customer discovery. One of the classes, you're actually assigned homework where you need at least 10 customer discovery interviews. And you go through this process and it ends with an actual pitch. So you put together your presentation based on a business model canvas and their actual investors and seasoned entrepreneurs, which Bill is one of those as well, in the audience, who I'm sure might be looking out for a great idea for them to follow up with.
Now, of the people who go through the pitch process, do any of them get funded?
So specifically with TIEX, the goal of the program isn't to get funding, but what TIE does overall as an organization does have angel investors as part of the organization, and they do pitch sessions, I think almost monthly or every other month. So that is naturally the next step. And there's TIEX is the first step in a two-course series. Mm-hmm. The second course is called TIEX Startup, I believe. And that's where you take really the idea you've developed, you've decided it's a good idea, and that's really where your goal is to get funding.
Mm-hmm. And have you moved to the second phase?
To the second phase.
You want some money, Angel? That's what he's asking. The man has pockets. He's an entrepreneur. You need some money, buddy?
I mean, we always are willing to pay people some money. however, I think that we're at a stage where, you know, we're very early on to customer discovery. We could actually benefit a lot more from an investor's knowledge and maybe even resources to get us through this customer discovery process to better define and get some better data. Because mm-hmm. that's what we found out through this investment trail. When you start considering, to Bill's point, the perspective of the investor, then, I mean, they're looking to give you some money, but they're looking for you to handle that money with responsible. So we took that to heart, and we believe that if we can – so let's get some data. Let's get some hard numbers. Let's get our idea some traction, and then we'll get to a place where, like, okay, this works. Okay, we can break this down to almost a formula, right? Mm-hmm. And then we can say, okay, this is the lifetime value. This is the customer acquisition cost. This is all the numbers that you need, and now we're ready for your money.
Those were some rather sophisticated phrases, and I would tell you that the first time I met Angel, I don't think he had a clue what any of those meant. And so I think that's part of the value of Ty is bringing in young entrepreneurs and asking hard questions about, well, tell me about the customer acquisition costs. And I start rolling to the back of their head. Say what? And so then they go out and they do their research and they sit down and they crunch the numbers. They do the interviews and they have an answer. And then that's a very helpful piece of information to determine whether or not they want to continue with the concept. That's a critical issue.
So I want to hear more about this customer discovery. You've mentioned it several times. You and I had an opportunity, Lee, to sit in on a table discussion at a Thai event.
Right, where they did every table had a different kind of conversation about the different elements, I guess, that were involved, and customer discovery was one of them.
Yeah, speak to that a little bit more if you would.
That's a good lesson for our listeners, to explain to how to go about the customer discovery process and some of the questions you should be asking yourself.
Of course. So the first thing you want to do is, so every business is based on assumptions, right? You have an idea and you assume people are going to do this. I'm going to supply this value because this is the need. This is the problem. This is what they have to gain. And this is how I'm going to fulfill and produce value. And this is how I'm going to make my money. These right. are all assumptions that we're talking about in concept. Customer discovery is the process where I understand what I think I know about my business, and then go and talk to, preferably with an MVP, but not necessarily a minimum viable product, basically something that a customer can touch, hold,
right.
Interact with. But basically, I'm going to ask specific yet not leading questions to unearth the needs, the pains, the gains. Basically, is this value that I'm providing solving your need? Is this value even necessary? And basically just that.
So first you determine who your profile of what a customer looks like. You
Correct.
Make that assumption.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then do you have one type of a customer, or are you kind of picking five different types of customers?
It depends
or you
on
decide?
The business. It depends on the business.
But like in your case, yours is gamers.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
Then there's one kind of gamer, or there's different kinds of like gamers in different platforms? Like what is the, in your case, what were the silos for the customers?
So in our case, right now we're going for PC gamers that are value conscious, okay? There are PC gamers that,
money's
not an object. I want a Titan, Titan NVIDIA card. It's basically a mini supercomputer,
right.
Which, I mean, it's just completely awesome.
And then how much is that?
$1,000.
$1,000.
For just the graphics card. That's not including your motherboard, CPU, nothing
right.
else. So that's not everyone, though.
Right.
You have people that they just want to play a game, and I want to do it, but I don't want to spend $1,000 for the whole system, never mind just the graphics card.
So you have to find these gamers that meet your profile.
Correct.
And then you call them, email them. What are you doing?
Sure. I mean,
everything.
If they're friends, you can do that. Actually, we found out like on different forums that people actually ask, all right, this is the video card that I'm more or less looking at. This is my budget. What do you guys think? So we can go in there, participate in those conversations, add value from our expertise, and say, what are you looking for? What's your budget? What are you looking to play? Add value, and then, tell them, hey, okay, great conversation. Check out our site. And then introduce the business that way as well.
Now, Kabir, this is one of the assignments, right, in the process?
Yes.
Is to contact 10, I believe you said.
Yep.
10 potential customers to have this kind of deeper conversation to really, you want someone to poke holes in your concept, right? You want them to stress test it to see if it's really viable and to unearth things that maybe you hadn't thought of before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the questions have to be, do you help them with the questions, like what to ask them? How does that occur?
We do in some cases. A lot of times the first version, there's a lot of creative freedom in terms of what you want to ask.
Right.
Some people don't ask the right people or the right questions. But typically we let it be more of a conversation, and it'll naturally – you'll learn something from it.
Well, you don't want 10 people to say, wow, that's a great idea, do you? I mean, is that like, oh, you're the smartest. That's exactly – you know, don't you want somebody to push you a little bit and to challenge your assumptions?
Yeah, I think as it evolves, you'll learn a little bit and you'll start coming up with more targeted questions and more of a scientific approach of asking the same question the same way and getting real metrics behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Really where a lot of the folks start is just – talking about the idea, and then that'll help you develop what questions to ask. And so there are folks that start all over the spectrum. Some of our participants know the methodology well, come with their questions, have already done some interviews before, and so they're much further along. When I started...
So you called Arby's.
Yeah. Well, it was similar to what Bill was mentioning. I didn't really know who to interview, so I spent a lot of my time interviewing end users of the technology rather than
people
somebody.
Who like fast food?
Yeah. Which.
But did you go to the manager of an Arby's to say, hey, I have this idea. Is this a pain point for you?
I did. Yeah, I did. And I certainly learned a little bit about kind of what the integration would take and all sorts of things like that. PCI compliance, all sorts of things.
But this is good mojo for organizations that have been in business for some time. Organizations should probably do this periodically anyway, right, General?
Oh, I think so. My experience has been that about every 6 months or so, the entrepreneur just needs to close the door, fire up the coffee pot, put his or her feet up on the desk, and sort of think through the business right from square one, look for problems, look for opportunities. Do your SWOT analysis all over again, and then there's a point that we haven't addressed, and that is the sustainable competitive advantage. When you start a business, you can pretty well launch it and get it off the ground if the concept's sound. But again, once you reach that bare minimum level, if you're making money, you're going to have a sustainable competitive advantage, or everybody else in the country is going to be doing the same thing. So that periodic review, and I put it at about every 6 months, because business plans don't last. They seldom make it through the startup mode. They take twice. Everybody knows it takes twice as long, costs twice as much, and after 6 months, the company doesn't look anything like what you thought it was going to look like in the start. Same thing's true 6 months after that. So about every 6 months, I think you need to sit down and just push back, take time, review it. I've created a small one-page front and back business summary form. And I think that that's a useful tool for any entrepreneur to just every 6 months just rewrap himself around that one page back and forth.
How do you do that with fresh eyes? I mean, how can you, when you're working on your business 24/7, it's the only thing you think about, how can you kind of re-look at it like you had never seen it before?
I don't advocate working 24/7.
Really?
No, absolutely not. That's why I...
You're Timothy Ferris 4-hour work week?
No, I don't believe that either. I think that's a stretch. But I think team. And one of those team members needs to be a CFO. I think early on you have to establish the company's culture.
So you need somebody that knows how to do math?
Much more than that. I think you can hire an accountant. I have CFO friends who use a great analogy, I think. Accountants are, imagine your company is an automobile and you're driving down the highway at 70 mile an hour, And the accountants are looking in the rearview mirror. They can tell you where the money came from. They can tell you where the money went. A chief financial officer is looking through the windshield. He's the guy or gal who's going to tell you about cash flow. You want to implement a new sales strategy, a new marketing strategy. That's wonderful. Now, where's the money going to come from? And let's take a look at the marketing plan, the sales plan, and let's put dollars to it, and let's see if it passes the cash flow test. I think one of the biggest challenges for entrepreneurs is cash flow, cash flow, cash flow, and that requires a team effort. I don't think any one person can build a company if it's going to be a multi-million dollar enterprise, unless, well, I don't know.
How early do you get that CFO-minded person involved? Because
Day one.
So you have no revenue, you have an idea,
yeah,
and you're going to get a guy that's just looking ahead,
yeah,
at financial opportunities? Would,
yeah,
that not, you wouldn't, where's the sales guy come in on this?
He's the marketing person. I would, if you're looking at the three or four critical people, I would say it's the marketing person. And by the way, the marketing person is going to be the most difficult to find, particularly here in Atlanta. The answer is they all want $35,000, and then you describe. I mean, they know their price before they know your problem. and to bring on a team member with marketing skills and strategic marketing skills, particularly in this town, it's very difficult to find these people.
Are you being facetious?
No, I'm not. I'm being absolutely
honest. So you don't think there's a lot of marketing people in Atlanta?
I don't think
with
that
these skills that you're looking for.
With an entrepreneurial spirit, no.
Even though there's huge Fortune 500 companies that have marketing departments.
Yeah, but they don't have this entrepreneurial
spirit.
Spirit,
yeah. Ask yourself how many corporate suits are willing or have that entrepreneurial spirit and have the confidence in their own abilities to lead an entrepreneurial enterprise. And I will tell you from my experience that there are very few.
Okay.
I can't.
You're the expert.
No, I'm not an expert. I can only just
operate
on my own personal experiences. But to your point about the CFO, and I think I understand that you're wondering, well, how in the world can a young entrepreneur afford a chief financial officer? Well, you don't need a CFO 20 workdays a month. You probably only need a CFO two days a month. So find yourself a fractional CFO. Find yourself someone who's willing to work for free for equity, and he or she's willing to put their heart and soul into that CFO role and understands small companies and is willing to work for 5 or 8 or 10% of the equity.
Now, you mentioned a CFO, a marketing person. What there's three or four people on this team, right?
Yeah, at this point, then I'd say it depends on the nature of the company. In Angel's case, I would imagine he's looking at some sort of a technoid who knows everything there is to know about anything associated with the technology of gaming. And he's got his view toward eventually selling this company to EA Entertainment or EA Sports or someone like that. It's going to take someone with that wide view of the technology.
So he needs a technologist?
For him, I would expect that he probably, that's one of his three or four key people.
I think one of the things that I like very much about the Atlanta community is, for example, in our company, it's myself and my brother. My brother, he's the tech guy. I have more of like a street marketing background. And even in my limited knowledge of marketing and like the marketing that we need for the company that we envision, I think I've been able to very much leverage from different people that we've been able to meet across the community. One person that immediately comes to mind is Jackie Chu. She's actually been able to help us, I mean, innumerably in coming up with strategy and customer personas, developing customer personas and things like that. So I think, honestly, all it takes is for an entrepreneur to just be diligent and just stubborn on their idea, and this is going to work. I don't know how it's going to work, but it's going to work. And I'm going to be stubborn enough to pursue it, but flexible enough to know when to pivot or what I need to change. So the entrepreneur, that's really what it takes to be like just the gut. Everything else, I mean, you can really leverage from this community in terms of like anything else that you need. We've actually sat down with different CFOs throughout the either Thai or ATDC that they've been able to help us with our financials. And of course, online now with Coursera and things like that, you can pick up an intro to finance course. So if there's a will, there's definitely a way. You just have to figure it out.
Now, before we wrap, why don't we go around the room and give everybody a chance to talk about the project they're working on and where our listener can learn more. And Bill, you want to talk about your book, Build It, Run It, Sell It?
The book's out in ebook format, and you can buy the book at Amazon for your Kindle or Barnes & Noble for your Nook or iUniverse or Google Books. You can pick it up anywhere. You can come to the website if you're looking to build a team or you're looking for teammates. And I have free databases on there that we've just opened up that allow entrepreneurs to come on board and post their want list, if you will, for teammates. And also for...
I'm looking for a co-host, so I just...
Oh, no.
I don't know that we would have any with an entrepreneurial spirit, but we can accommodate entrepreneurs. So it's buildit-runit-sellit.com, and come on and take a look at the databases and populate them. Just contact our database manager and we'll populate the databases for free. We don't charge.
And there's
anything.
A lot of resources for the entrepreneur there, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Including the potential green card investors. We haven't talked about them, but you know the government has a program whereby a foreigner can invest $1 million in an equity arrangement, passive equity arrangement. If the enterprise then hires 10 Americans and they're, well, as soon as the investment's made, the foreigner gets a provisional green card for himself and his entire immediate family. And if the company hires 10 Americans and they're still on the job, not necessarily the same bodies, but 10, after a period of 2 years, that green card can be made permanent. So it's a it's a great opportunity.
That's an opportunity for a lot of people.
Yeah, and we on the website we show every green card regional center in the country. I've forgotten how many there are. There's a couple hundred.
So there's a matchmaking function there.
Yeah, passively. Uh-huh. We just indicate the regional center, its address, and the industries that they're interested in, and the industries in which their investors are interested. So it's nationwide. Anyone can come on and take a look at it.
Well, good stuff. Angel, your website? And
yeah, so on Wednesday, August 1st, we're actually releasing our low-fidelity MVP. People are welcome to check it out. Actually, I personally invite everyone to check it out at www.uthinkpc.com.
Cool.
And yeah, I mean, just if you're really excited about the
jump on, see what it's
contact out. Us. You know, we're definitely here to learn from the community.
All right, and Kabir, what are you selling now?
So I'll drop two plugs real quick. I'm currently with a local, not so startup anymore, company called AirWatch.
Yes.
And we are hiring. So specifically, I'm looking for technical consultants. So I would encourage folks to log on to careers.air-watch.com.
And radio hosts? You looking for radio hosts?
Anybody can submit their resume. So that's one, and we're right up the road from the offices here. And then the other plug I'll drop is for folks to visit the Thai Atlanta website, thaiatlanta.org, to learn a little bit more about our programs, learn a little bit more about ThaiX, and all the other programs we offer as well.
Now, when's the next TIEX 4-week class?
How
often do they do it?
They do them about every 6 to 8 weeks. So I think another session just kicked off recently here. And there's information on how to be part of that on the TIE Atlanta website.
And how much is it? If you apply, then you get to go, or they kind of weed out some
people? There is a screening process. We want to make sure folks are motivated and raise the bar for the class,
right?
And so we can coach people through if they kind of have an idea.
Once
what
they're close, you can help them.
Yeah,
now, absolutely. How many people typically participate? About
There were about in the session we did with Bill and Angel. There's probably about 10 to 15 folks. And so typically class one starts with maybe 20, 25, and then it gets cut down to about the 10, 15 really serious, meaningful conversations.
And how much does it cost?
Nothing.
Nothing? Man, this Thai organization is very generous. They do a lot of stuff
really
for the community
are.
For either low it's or no fee. It's really an unbelievable opportunity. So once again, the website for Thai?
ThaiAtlanta.org.
Great. Well, thank you for being part of this, and thank all of our guests. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.